This is Ron Stefanski, host of Disrupted in the D. And we are here in the D at NewLap, and we're about to embark on a pretty wild ride here in the world, in the disrupted world of workforce. And what do I mean by that? I mean to say we are talking about nothing less than a 5G wired workforce, augmented technology, interconnected, globally interdependent, AI accelerated, Web3 immersive, pandemic interrupted world out there. And so, as I told these two ladies, as an old guy in the room, what I have to say on behalf of all the other old white guys out there is we got to stand down. We got to let the women who understand this and who are trumpeting change on a massive scale here in the city, we got to give you the floor. We have to stand down and support what you're doing. The three of you are doing some pretty amazing things. And so I want to get right into it with introductions. We have with us here today the leader of our city workforce system, the DESC, Detroit Employment Solutions Corp, Dana Williams. Dana, so great to have you. And then we have Tiffany Graydon from Focus Hope. And we also have with us the head of workforce development for Skilled Trade. And so, ladies, let's get at this. So, Tiffany, I'm going to start with you to give our audience a little bit of perspective of what's happened in Detroit. Detroit, as people see it from outside of our world, know that we've had our ups and downs. And certainly, in my 64 years, one of the low points in the city of Detroit was the revolution of 1967. And a lot of people struggled with that after the riots occurred, after the National Guard came in, after we had this huge blemish, after it torpedoed Jerome Kavanaugh's mayoral aspirations or gubernatorial aspirations, because the city looked like it didn't work anymore. A bunch of people got together and said, no, we gotta work our way through. And they developed a strategy around hope. And that's where Focus Hope was incepted. So can you give us a little perspective? Because you've been there a while and you've been driving this mission to make concrete focus around hope in our city.
Absolutely. So Focus Hope literally was founded out of the social rebellion of 1967. So weeks after, like, our location is in the heart of the neighborhood where the revolution broke out. Weeks after, there were a lot of grocery stores that burned down, people couldn't get food. And so they thought this was an idea of helping the community for the summer. Right. And so they called this project Summer Hope. It was a Catholic priest. One of his parishioners, which was a housewife, suburban housewife with five children. And they decided, let's feed people. Let's figure out, so the grocery stores get back up and running, how we feed people. And they called this project Summer Hope. And they realized after the summer ended, the grocery stores were back up. People were still hungry. Right. And you're like, OK, maybe this isn't Summer Hope. We have to focus on what is the hope of Detroit for the future. And so they named the organization Focus Hope, stood it up, and decided, okay, we have the very first, oldest, the largest commodities and supplemental food program in this country.
Right.
Right. We feed 45,000 seniors per month in 9 counties.
Amazing. Just really hats off to you guys. It's been amazing for a long time.
Absolutely.
I think it's important to say that to our audience.
Absolutely. And once they had been doing that for a while, some folks came, and as a Catholic priest, they have a lot of parishioners, and they shared that they had been discriminated against. I won't share the company, but of course he had attorneys in his parish and got a lot of attorneys together, and they filed a large lawsuit against this employer, not necessarily just for the money, but to change employment practices. And the little guys won, right? Focus Hope was the fiduciary of this trust for 40 years. And out of that, he decided, we can't sue every big company in Michigan, across the world. How do we change employment practices? And in 1981, we started our Workforce Development and Education Division. He said, we will have
change the conversation.
We will change the conversation. We will not give employers the space to say Detroiters aren't trained. Detroit does not have talent. And so we started to train in advanced manufacturing, IT, construction, logistics and transportation, and a host of apprenticeships.
It's an amazing story. And for anyone that's in the Detroit area, for those outside the city, when anyone thinks of Focus Hope, they think of people who get it done. You know, this is an organization that started out as a neighborhood initiative and basically took to scale the idea that we're not going to leave Detroiters impoverished. And it wasn't only we're going to feed you, we're going to show you, you know, we're going to teach you how to fit and put these skill traits to work. And then you guys have subsequently gone through some additional transformation because you had a lot of real estate out there. The philanthropy had changed. The world of corporate workforce has changed. And so you guys had to pivot and then they had to kind of reinvent yourself, right?
Absolutely. Around 2011, a lot of the funding structure changed, right? But in addition to that, our last kind of tie to some of our legislators, some of the folks in Washington passed away, and that was our co-founder, Eleanor Jo Sipes. And so as those funding structures changed and even earmarked federal dollars dried up, we had to really look, you know, going into 2020 with our new CEO. She has been the CEO for, of course, Portia Roberson for 2 years. We were $3 million in debt. And so we had to figure out, we have all of this real estate, right? What are we going to do? We're paying for buildings that we're not even using. We have to figure out how to restructure that. And by 2022, we were debt free. And so
another fantastic story, seriously.
Completely restructured, changed the way that we do workforce, that we do early learning and youth development, that we do food for seniors. And so Focus Hope is an organization that keeps evolving.
It is an amazing story. And since we're talking about transforming workforce in the city, there is no one better to talk about it from the city perspective than Dana Williams, who took our DESC, our Detroit Employment Solutions Corporation, through a massive change in governance and in structure to create a more responsive workforce platform, if you will, for the city. So Dana, I want to hear from you. Talk to us about all that change you went through, because you had employees that basically were told, we're going away. Your job is going away. Now, we're going to try to hire you in the new organization, but that doesn't necessarily give people a lot of confidence based on all the restructurings going around out there. So talk to us a little bit about how that transformation happened and ultimately led to a really positive outcome.
Well, Ron, thank you for the opportunity. I certainly am not doing this work alone. I am standing on the shoulders of absolute giants. You want to talk about some heavy-hitting women that came before me? That was a Pam Moore. That was a Nicole Sherrard Freeman. That's now a Terry Weems. So I'm certainly building on the work of all of them over the past few years. You know, as you said, workforce development in Detroit kind of came in and out of the Big C city of Detroit as an organization for years. Sometimes it was a department, sometimes it wasn't. Sometimes it was, sometimes it wasn't. But behind the scenes, Detroit Employment Solutions Corporation as the nonprofit has been here for a very long time. And so most recently, this mayor that we have here today in Mike Duggan worked with business leaders to re-envision it, right? And so really capitalizing on DESC as that core nonprofit and then building from there. So the vision was to be able to spread these federal resources around the city, the various organizations, to folks like Focus Hope and others who we knew were doing good work. And so as a centralizing agency, that is DESC's role. The Mayor's Workforce Development Board has appointed us as the fiduciary, the compliance manager, and operations really a facilitator for workforce development in Detroit. And so while we support all of the governance and the compliance and monitoring work here locally, it is all to be able to get these dollars to the organizations that are supporting Detroiters and those residents firsthand. And so under the Mayor's Workforce Development Board, we've established what our target industries are for Detroiters, for those best jobs that we can get people into that are going to lead them into full middle-class careers, to bring and partner with economic development to make sure that both the legacy companies that have been here the whole time, as well as new ones that are coming in, Detroiters have first hit at those jobs and to find out about them and understand that they can indeed live, play, and work in the city and maintain fulfilling lives. So DESC is one of many entities that makes up the Detroit at Work brand. It is the Mayor's Workforce Board, DESC, our 9 career centers on the adult side, 6 on the youth side, and countless other organizations that either support us in managing customers, in training them, and providing support services and barrel removal for them.
And so when we talk about workforce, a lot of times the conversation starts around this idea that we've got to meet people where they are. And so one of the places where you and I first started working together was when Butch Hollowell set up the expungement program, right? And what I thought was so creative about it is that the city was willing to pay for people to get their records expunged so they could clear their work, their background history, and make themselves available and make themselves work ready on paper. And you guys jumped in and said, hey, there's going to be one string attached. You got to attend workforce development with through the DESC to qualify the program. So let's talk a little bit about that, because to me, that's where you and I first started talking about workforce. And to me, it was a pretty important program because so many thousands of people had old nonviolent crimes on their records that really weren't worthy of being expunged in order to set the stage for them to get back to work. They've already proven themselves. They're back in the neighborhood. They're not causing harm, but they are being prevented from meaningful, life-sustaining, family-supporting work. So let's talk about that episode in our workforce conversation
together. Yeah. So Ron, you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the main reasons why we're here is to kind of pool resources to be able to solve those barriers that are stopping Detroiters from going to work, right? Because we know that talent is distributed evenly, but opportunity is not. And so among the many kind of situations where we find Detroiters in who might have issues with transportation or with childcare, or with food or housing insecurity, you know, certainly justice involvement at some point in one's life was one of those as well. So we leaned in really early to really 2 things. One was around the driver's responsibility fees, and 2 was around the expungements of these nonviolent crimes where we could, as you're saying, unlock talent from the very beginning. So that program is called Project Clean Slate. It is still in operation today, continues to help Detroiters move through that process. In fact, I think I just saw they are still recruiting for Detroiters to work with them. So it is located on the City of Detroit's website. It used to be much closer to us as the workforce system, but realized that those sort of things stop people from getting all the resources that are owed to them, right? So that expungement is not only important.
I think that's right.
But also for getting a house, for getting that first car payment, right? All those right. other things. And so city has taken it over and it just continues to grow.
Yeah, no, Clean Slate has been great because it really allows people to jump back into the conversation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having been an expat from Detroit and having moved back 6 months in time to participate fully in Detroit's bankruptcy, when we first moved back here, there were a lot of people that were unsettled by the economic tsunami of 2008, 2009. And so you had a lot of broken ends for people where unemployment was 3 times what it is now. A lot of people were leaving the city and leaving behind any asset they had, and their primary asset in many cases was their home. So these programs are all essential. If you can stabilize housing, if you can stabilize employment, you can get people participating. I think the one thing that gets missed by virtue of our long history of ups and downs as a city is that there are a lot of people out there who simply want to work. You know, that's the real people history of Detroit, is we have a lot of people who just want to have the opportunity to work. And I think that's what these kinds of things do. I think another way, and I want to bring you into this conversation, Sandy, I think another way that we're transforming the conversation around workforce in Detroit is to recognize that the days of having a caseworker at a workforce board talking to an individual and then saying, okay, you need some skills. Okay, here's a voucher to go to the community college, press a button, and they go there. In some cases, that's not necessarily a good solution. There are transportation issues. There are daycare issues. There's also a completion challenge that some of our community college partners face, where you go into a program And you get locked before you come out with something tangible, a credential, an associate's degree. So at the same time, we have a workforce system that has struggled to really understand e-learning and online learning and whether or not it's got a lot of efficacy. And fortunately, over the last 10 years, we've seen vast improvements in how we're getting impact and outcomes from people taking advantage of online learning. And so, Sandy, you're an expert in this area. You've been doing workforce development in the healthcare space for a long time, over a decade now. So how do you see e-learning entering into this conversation when you talk about transforming the workforce conversation? Where does that come into play in this conversation?
Yeah, Ron, you're absolutely right. With COVID hitting us, online training became even more powerful and more sought after. So what is online training and how can we make it better? So Jason Aubrey, the CEO and founder of Skilltrain, said, we need to take online learning to the next level. Not only is it an advantageous way for people to work around their schedule, their transportation, their family responsibilities, their employment, so they can do their training around their clock, but they still get today's technology and A1 interactions, simulations, and games, right? You got to keep their interest. It can't be just a lecture because
a happy check the box. Yeah, that's what a lot of, I mean, I've been in the e-learning industry for 25 years. And regrettably, a lot of what we first came out with in many different places and spaces were online learning initiatives that checked a box. Okay, you went through it and it said you passed, so you got the certificate, but did it really engage you? Did you really get to engage with an instructor? Did you get to engage with each other? Did you really feel like, wow, that was really helpful? I really feel more prepared now. Not in a lot of cases. So you guys are tripping a switch here and changing it up in terms of what online learning looks next level. So talk a little bit more about
that. Absolutely. We have segments that are AI interaction, where the student literally has to communicate with an avatar in their training program, and then they're graded. And they get to hear what worked and what didn't work. They have games, simulations, and activities. So they have to participate. And what does that do to the student? It helps them comprehend it. It makes them stay focused in what they're learning because they have to participate in their training. But then let's take it to the next level. One of our core classes is a medical assistant program, right? High demand all across the country. Everywhere we go.
We're getting that constantly, right? In the city of Detroit, Henry Ford Health, Ascension, DMC, they're always clamoring for medical assistants, right?
Absolutely. But to do strictly online training for medical assistants doesn't work. What can we do different? So we have a hybrid model that blended online training with hands-on clinical labs. So the exciting part is every other weekend, the student not only does their online training during the week, but they go to a healthcare facility Saturdays from 8 to noon and get those hands-on labs with an instructor, with their co-students and their peer groups to be able to learn how to use the tools that they've been learning and the theories that they've been learning throughout the week.
You know, Dana, I want to put this on you now because you've been collaborating with Sandy and Skilltrain on this whole idea. And to me, you know, what it's doing that I find highly intriguing is taking the best of the best and putting it and kind of mashing it together. There are aspects of online learning that make it possible for your constituents and people coming to DESC to take advantage of learning that otherwise wouldn't be available. There isn't a daycare issue. There isn't a get home and do it issue. The other thing that I find intriguing about this hybrid model is it's not only that you're putting people in a medical facility, but you're moving them from the sterile environment of perhaps a community college system where they're sitting in a classroom late at night, they're tired, they're exhausted, they have to go there at a specific time. But now you're saying, okay, we're going to launch this thing in medical facilities. And oh, by the way, when they're there, they get to see what life's going to look like for them when they get out. I mean, I think that's another unintended consequence of what you're talking about.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Agree?
So definitely a couple things. What we learned through the pandemic was that people can learn in a hybrid environment. But it is about us as the workforce system making sure that they at least have a baseline of digital skills so that they can actually engage on the computers. Now, programs like Sandy's does include some of that orientation and onboarding that's so important. Because what we know today is that no matter what the job is, some level of digital understanding is critical. And yes, now that we have been able to, again, through the pandemic and lots of philanthropic efforts, been able to get devices into people's hands, they can participate in these types of trainings much more often and see both. The other really important part that we're seeing right now for adults is the importance of career navigation. We're always talking about it for kids, right? So they get to see all of these types of programs firsthand before they walk in the door to go to work. And so wherever we can with our partners, do more of that so that Detroiters can both get the technical skills, but also feel the environment that they'd be working in before they actually take the job. It's always better. And to have a coach, a mentor, an instructor, an employer partner that can also answer their questions along the way is just going to help with what we call that stickiness, so that people are able to complete their training and enter and then stay in and advance in that job.
You know, one of the things as we talk about focusing our hope, what I focus my hope on is that I think in some respects, and I'm interested in your all of your takes on this, but I think that what online learning is also doing is it's helping the other players in the space, higher end colleges, universities, and also proprietary schools, the Dorseys of the world, the good operators out there of, you know, proprietary programs in nursing and medical tech and a community college system. And they're making them better because they're disrupting the way education is being delivered. So as they have to fight for enrollments, they got to say, wait a minute, because you wouldn't use the word flexibility or agile when you're talking about higher education in many cases. But now I think you're seeing, even as you work, you continue working with community colleges. This is not a diss on them, but aren't you seeing, I mean, it seems to me, you're seeing a more responsive higher ed community now where they're starting to bring online learning tools into the classroom and where they're trying to adapt their programs to meet the needs of people. And they're moving into the community more so that they can bring these programs to people rather than having them fight transportation issues and daycare to finally get to the
door. That's right. And they better do it too, because the next generation of learner expects it, right? They don't expect to sit behind a desk and just have a piece of paper and a notebook and start drawing. They expect to be engaged with technology, to be able to have some hands-on plus the instruction. So we're trying to move this mammoth of a system toward more of those innovative type programmings that offer various ways of learning as well.
I was old enough to be in the city of Detroit during the revolution, the rebellion. And I remember that was a very dark time. And I was a kid, but I do remember certain things. I do remember the curfew. I do remember getting turned away. I had an uncle who was being taken to a cemetery, and you could not gather in groups of more than three. So we were turned away, and they took the casket. The family was sent out and said, and those kind of memories stick with you as a kid, right? But I think the other thing that it reminded me of is during those early days with Focus Hope, you guys focus a lot of time on something that's near and dear to a lot of Detroiters, which is skill traits. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more because you saw some enrollments tapering off in that area. So how have you adjusted? I know that's still a focus, but how have you, you know, kind of pivoted with respect to skill traits? Because that's what Focus Hope was known for so many years and so superior in the delivery of those programs.
And so all of our programs, skill trades or otherwise, when you really look at them now, are some form of tech programs. You talked a little bit about the split and being able to be agile. Before the pandemic, we were 100% person, right? And then we switched and we were 100% online. And we felt that the best of the two were about 55% online and 45% in person for those hands-on learning activities. So going into the positions, whether it be in a manufacturing environment, whether it be in a construction environment, all of those skilled trades, whether it be, we have a great partnership with Great Lakes Water Authority. There is some form of tech in every one of those areas.
Right.
And so we've had to kind of do the red ocean, blue ocean strategy. Every year we do a curriculum review. We're looking at how are we staying up with tech that are in these new facilities with what employers are doing? How are we keeping up with that? And how are the skilled trades evolving for new positions? And so we're continuing to do that.
Well, you know, we're going to have to wrap here in a second. For those of our listening and viewing audience, you've been listening to Disrupt That with Ron Stefanski, your host, right here in the D, right here in the new lab facility and across town at DESC's headquarters as we brought this value of technology, right? We brought Dana in so that she could meet up with us as well. But there's two things I want to cover. I think based on some of the really game-changing use of technology and hybrid forms of learning that you guys are coming up with, I'd love to invite Jason Opry to come back with you, Sandy, to talk more about that, because I think there's a real future in hybrid learning and being able to deploy it on an as-needed basis. So that's one thing I want to come back to you guys with, and let's plan to have another episode with Jason in the room. And then secondly, I'm going to put my idea out there that we talked about last fall. And I just had a conversation at the Detroit Rotary. And what I recognized was how to get the message across. And this is my passion point. Dana, we've been talking about this for a while, but 2025 is the year we draw a line in the sand. We put a stake in the ground. And I want to work together with the city of Detroit and the workforce community to stand up an online high school and skilled trades academy for adult dropouts. And I'm calling it our moonshot moment. We have the technology. Look what Sandy just described. She described stunning state-of-the-art technology in e-learning. And we have, it's something extraordinary, like 25% of our population in the city of Detroit over the age of 18 doesn't have a high school diploma. Well, it doesn't matter just alone that we're doing the Clean Slate program to clear their records, but we also have to get a credential on the books with them, because the high school credential forms the basis of everything else. So, Dana, I'm going to invite you back to talk more about that. Okay. We're having this conversation with Nando Felton at Grand Central and Google, because I think Detroit can be the city that shines in this respect. You got people like Jason and Sandy in the world of tech. You got other programs out there that are working and making a difference. You guys have been playing with Interplay, right? And that's a VR-based skilled trades program. So you guys are experimenting and collaborating as never. I've never seen DESC doing this much collaboration across the span of your program offering. So
that's our goal.
On that note there, Ron, the one thing that Focus Hope, Detroit at Works, and SkillTrade is doing is a very unique custom program to get medical assistants trained in 20 weeks. They're getting that clinical lab being done with our partners in healthcare facilities, getting an externship with Epic Health and their central locations across the area to get that 80-hour externship and hands-on. But they're not only doing training, simultaneously, they're getting supportive services.
Right.
With
that's the key, right there.
And Detroit at Works. So you have a three-way partnership that's going above and beyond and being creative in this pilot program, offering hybrid training, supportive services with, you know, Detroit at Works and their case managers with Focus Home to make sure that the students come out with a certified clinical medical assistant to get those 660 job openings and apply for them at a medical assistant position here in Detroit.
You know, I really firmly believe that as we make more educational opportunities available to people in more flexible environments and using more flexible and agile educational and learning models, I think the possibilities are endless. And I think, I actually challenged Mary Sheffield, president of our city council, to say, you know what? If we're going to talk about inclusive economic development, then we have to bring these Detroiters along. And we all should share in the shame, the disappointment, and the frustration of not getting more of them on a track toward these jobs that are out there, because there are some very good paying jobs in our hospital systems. There are some very good paying jobs returning to the automotive sphere. There are good paying jobs in the mobility sector now. And we don't need college to get them there. What we need to do is a moon launch of technology combined with your human and additional support services to get this done. So do I have your commitment, Dana?
You have my commitment to talk about it, that's for sure. Because it's really not about us, right? The other difference maker here is Henry Ford as the employer. So it is about all of us talking to the employers about what's required to make sure that their environments and their cultures are ready for Detroit's talent and to invest their dollars maybe a little bit differently as they had before to support more programs like this. That's where, Ron, I think you and I, we can really go far. Plus Tiffany and Sandy and all the rest of our partners here. We got to talk to the employers and bring them along with us because we picked
Dana,
the call.
Dana, go. I love this. So Dana, put March 27th on your calendar. I've arranged to have Mary Sheffield speak on the issue of our next chapter of inclusive economic and workforce development. We're doing a town hall meeting in my living room. And I want you to be there because we've been talking about this and we're putting our stake in the ground in 2025 to make this happen. Okay. So I can't thank the three of you enough for the work that you're doing. For any of you Detroiters or non-Detroiters listening, is this not an amazing new chapter in the way we're getting Detroiters prepared for the workforce of the future? I can't imagine a more imaginative, more collaborative way to do this than the work you three are doing at each of your organizations. So if you're listening to us out there, thank you, Dana Williams from DESC. Thank you, Sandy Weave from SkillTrade. Thank you, Tiffany Gray from Focus Hope. I want you listeners and viewers to get disrupted with us. That means give us your feedback, give us your commentary, share this story with others, and we're going to come back after our town hall on the 27th, and we're going to talk more about the progress we're going to make to GSD this to the finish line.
All right, let's go.
Thank you all, and thanks for joining us on Disrupt Ed. It's been a great episode. Thank you all.